This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by NVIDIA, the inventor of the GPU. NVIDIA's Tesla GPUs are designed to accelerate HPC applications. Learn more by visiting NVIDIA at SC11. www.nvidia.com/SC11.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputer tops 10 petaflops.
And good news, bad news for AMD.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for November 4th, 2011, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. As we predicted, stories are starting to heat up prior to supercomputing, not only vendors coming out with news, but we're seeing a lot of stuff happening on the end user side, and a lot of things we're going to talk about today have to do with actual installations.
Yeah, there's a lot of news out there popping up in preparation for what's probably going to be news at SC and what's going to go on there. Yep. Let's start out with probably maybe the biggest story of the week that will affect sort of the top 500 rankings, or really
it
not.
Affects the top one rankings is what it affects. Let's go right to number one.
Right, and it's actually the system that's currently number one. It's the K computer that captured the top spot last June, or this previous June, and they finished that machine. It was only an eight petaflop machine, and they finished it, and they met their mark, and now it's over 10 petaflops on Linpack,
right.
And that looks like it's going to be the winner, because I don't know of any other machine that's going to be deployed in the next 2 weeks that's going to beat that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, in last week's show, we had the breaking news of the Chinese supercomputer that surprised us at one petaflop, and we'll come back in our last segment and finish talking about that one today. But I don't think we're going to get surprised by a 10 petaflop system. I don't see anything coming out of the woodworks that we don't know about that's going to be 10.
Right. Those are hard to hide. Those are big systems. Now, of course, you know, the Chinese can surprise us that they've done before. They could be secretly building some big GPU CPU monster in the dungeon there, but I haven't heard anything about that. And all the American machines, the Blue Jeans and such, that and the
Blue
Titan
Jeans,
machine,
Titan Stampede, those things are all
2012. Yeah,
yeah, they're all 2012. Now this is a continuation for K of what, like you said, what they announced at ISC. They had announced all along that this was going to be 10 petaflops. So this is them coming in and fulfilling that promise. It's actually more than 10, isn't
right.
it? It's around 11.
Right. The peak is 11.28, I think. And then they got very good Linpack efficiency on it. They've got a nice little interconnect, a six-dimensional interconnect that obviously is doing a very good job of talking between the nodes. So they got like a 93% efficiency for Linpack and was able to get 10.5 petaflops out of it, Linpack. So yeah, quite the system now, and almost a shoe-in for the number one system.
Right.
And there's going to be some interesting research being done on that thing in Japan, at least.
Well, all the things that were impressive about it when they launched it are still impressive about it. That Japan came out and delivered this system. They're the first to 10 petaflops. They did overcome a lot of natural disasters to keep this on time. That it's Fujitsu, I thought was a very nice surprise. Running Spark processors is still a nice surprise.
Right.
You know, this is a very impressive machine, and it's going to be nice to see it going back-to-back at the top of the list in that way. It's one of these iconic systems that's out there. And now, congratulations, we are 1% of the way to an exaflop.
Yeah, just 99% to go.
Got
so we
the
can
next 7 years to make up the other 99%.
Yeah, well, that's why we need that exponential curve. I think I recognize it was three and a half years ago when we got the petaflop system. So just 3.5 years now, we've got 10 times that amount. So Fortunately, we're on that kind of curve, because if it was linear, we'd be here forever, I think. But
But if you go three and a half years for every order of 10 magnitude and stay logarithmic like that, then 2018 is another two orders of magnitude, and there's your exaflop.
Piece of cake. Yeah.
Yeah, it won't even be hard. I think they should move easy in the goals.
Yeah, now we're jaded. We're talking about these petaflop machines, like you mentioned, the China system we're going to talk about later. It's a petaflop. It's like, a mere petaflop.
Well, yeah, let's come back and talk. Well, what we said last week was we've gotten to the point where we're surprised by petaflop systems that we didn't know were coming. I think that in itself is noteworthy. Let's go to let's take a break and then go to our second story first. We got news in both directions for AMD.
Accelerate your HPC application with NVIDIA Tesla GPUs. As a companion processor to the CPU, Tesla GPUs are designed from the ground up for HPC and deliver industry-leading performance per watt. To learn how Tesla GPUs can accelerate science and engineering, visit NVIDIA at SC11, www.nvidia.com/SC11.
So, Michael, we had both good news and bad news for AMD this week. What do you want to start with, the good news or the bad news?
Well, let's do the good news first, kind of pick up on the HPC theme, at least. It was the bad news is a little bit related to the company itself. But, there was an interesting system that was announced built by Penguin Computing with AMD's new Fusion chips, the so-called accelerator processing units, their APUs. They built an experimental cluster for Sandia National Lab that's like 60 teraflops. It's an experimental system, and it's using these GPU integrated chips to power it, and the Sandia folks are going to basically be experimenting with software models. They're going to be using OpenCL, which is AMD's big model for their Fusion processor, and start looking at how that can work into HPC applications.
Right. So Sandia's got a new supercomputer. Penguin's the vendor on it, so it's absolutely good news for Penguin. Get them back in there again. But you point out this is this AMD Fusion architecture. This looks like a different direction than they were on before from x86 and Firestream.
Yeah, definitely. And they've been pushing this for a while. I really do get the impression that AMD is pushing most behind their Fusion architecture for their future GPUs. I think they see these things being integrated. It's not like the discrete GPUs are going to go away for various things, but I think they're putting most of their resources and emphasis on this kind of thing. It's unique. Yeah. It differentiates them, and they've got a good start.
It seems like this is where they're betting their future path. Then this will compete with NVIDIA's Project Denver, right?
Exactly right. I mean, NVIDIA announced that a while back. They're going to put ARM CPUs on with their GPUs on the same chip, and this is basically an x86 CPU with basically the ATI, the Radeon GPU technology on the same chip. So they're going to go head-to-head probably a couple of years down the road when both are ready for prime time for servers and supercomputers. But yeah, this is shaping up to be that sort of matchup.
Now it's worth mentioning that this looks like it's kind of a custom deal from Penguin and AMD for this Sandia one. It was given a specific system name, the Altus 2A00. We don't see any news about this being a standard product that Penguin's going to offer.
No, I don't see that happening. I mean, basically the chips that were used were for AMD's were these A8-3850 chips, which are going into desktop systems. So they didn't design this for a supercomputer. In fact, I think you could probably out teraflop this system if you just put in some high-end x86 chips. It's just an experimental system to play with the supercomputing model and to play with this sort of new heterogeneous processor platform.
Now let's look at the flip side of news for AMD that we had this week. We're talking about what looks like the future direction and where AMD is making its bets. The flip side of that is that AMD yesterday announced a 11% reduction in force. They had a lot of layoffs yesterday.
Yeah, I think they're actually going to string those out through the first quarter of this year. But yeah, they're getting ready to do, I read 10%, but yeah, I've read things as high as 12% of the workforce they're going to eventually let go, and that's already started as part
of it. It has already started. There were people we were going to be meeting with at Supercomputing, at least one who got back to me and said, whoops, change of plans. So that's a shame. So we know it is going to be hitting people who are in HPC or Firestream. I don't yet know the full extent of who it is or who it isn't, but it seems like it's fairly broad-based. There's a lot of people getting hit.
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be sort of a refocus on what AMD sees as their core business and their growth business, which looks like sort of the low-power mobile space. They see, obviously, like everybody does, they see great growth in that, and they see less growth in the desktop space. We're not sure how this is going to affect the server space, because there's growth there too, but certainly the main part of this company is now, it looks like it's going to be focused on the volume chips that are going into these low-power client systems.
Right, and we've talked before on this podcast how AMD has been losing share against Intel in these 64-bit high-end chips, and now in conjunction with this Sandia news, this Penguin system that's got the fusion-based chips, I mean, that's really in line with doing these lower power designs. So it looks like that is probably the right the direction that AMD is going on. Furthermore, we should mention, although we didn't mention when it happened a couple months ago, that Mark Papermaster is now the CTO at AMD, and he was a designer on the iPhone 4. So right. This is again lining up with these lower power processors for mobile devices.
Right. And I think, AMD in the past or over the past year has been criticized for not getting into this market more aggressively. And I think they've recognized that. Now they're going to do this or attempt to do this. And that's what all of this is about with the layoffs and the new blood in the system.
Well, in fact, credit where credit's due, Michael. I think you were one of the people who criticized them. And on one of these podcasts, I bet if we go back, we could find you talking about how your idea that they should be licensing ARM.
Yeah, and I still think they should do that. I think we both read some of the coverage on this, that people are starting to think that maybe they are thinking about that, that maybe they're going to go head-to-head against some of their competition by licensing ARM technology. There's no announcements to that effect, but I still think that's a good idea, and I think it's within the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, but you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Feldman, HPC Wire. Months ago saying that AMD ought to be licensing ARM. I'm going to be hiring you as an analyst, pal.
Yeah, we'll see if it comes to pass. It's like they, the companies rarely take my advice, but when they do, they're always right. So,
at least in the press they are.
Yeah.
All right, let's take one more break and then come back and we'll recap the story we had last week as we've got a little more detail around this Chinese Sunway supercomputer.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by NVIDIA Tesla GPUs. Visit NVIDIA at SC11. www.nvidia.com/SC11.
So we're back from our break. And yeah, Addison, you mentioned we were talking about that domestically built Chinese supercomputer last week that just kind of popped up on the news on last Friday. And there was more information we found out as we researched the story this week, and sure enough, it is a domestically produced supercomputer, but it's not just the processors that we talked about last week.
Everything about this system seems to be Chinese, right?
Everything that I found out about it looked like it was built or designed in China, including the entire software stack, which obviously was the compiler for those chips, but also the operating system and the management and libraries and the MPI libraries. The whole thing was built or designed and created there, as well as the interconnect, which was InfiniBand based, but it looks like they built their own InfiniBand switch around this thing.
Right.
And all the other components, basically the cooling, the infrastructure design around the supercomputer was all Chinese made. So this is as pure a domestic supercomputer as you can get.
Yeah, China really becomes the third country on the list where we would say you're capable of doing something like this. The U.S., obviously, if you look at a system like, say, Titan, is all American. It's U.S. vendors. It's U.S. designs. It's U.S. I guess you get some things that are fabbed in China or Taiwan, of course, which maybe this is all fabbed in China, as far as I know, with the Sunway system. So right, in a sense, it could be a more all one country system than a U.S. system is.
Right. In a sense, I would consider the American systems, they are U.S.-based vendors, certainly right. For the national lab systems especially, but a lot of those companies I would consider international companies, certainly IBM, Intel, NVIDIA, those were all international companies.
Right.
I mean, in a sense, the Chinese system is a little different in that it was basically built and designed by companies and organizations, I should say, that are not really international. So it's a little more
very, very closed off. It seems to be all Chinese technology. And then, of course, to finish the list, I talked about American systems, Japanese systems, of course.
Right.
You can get Japanese architectures, Japanese chips, Japanese designs
right.
put together into a supercomputer. We talked about it. Bull doesn't quite make the list, right? Because although
right.
they can have an architecture, they don't have their own chips.
Right. Yeah. I think, I mean, sort of the draw where you might draw the line would be if you're making your own chips and designing your own system, I'd consider that an indigenous supercomputer. And China's the third one on the list. We talked about the K computer. They've got their own chips in the Spark. And then, of course, we've got Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, and so on here. So, it's sort of a rare club and China just joined it. And, it'll be interesting to see if they sort of continue down this path, or they try and do sort of a mixed model, buy some exported systems and develop some indigenously, or just go to all domestically produced stuff. But it's certainly an interesting development to watch, and it's maybe a little worrying for U.S.-based vendors and U.S. HPC in general.
Big news on the supercomputing side this week, Michael. And next week we'll have our regularly scheduled Friday podcast, and it'll be sort of our supercomputing preview show. Right after that, we're all heading to Seattle. In fact, I'll already be there.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. God, that seems soon. But yep, you're right. Next week will be our pre-show, and then off to Seattle and the fun and games there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael, and we'll talk to you next week.
All righty.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.